Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 246, being recorded on the 12th of September, 2018. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Evan and Kendall. And we're a bit of a small group today, but have an important topic to talk about. Last week was arguably a dark week for Azure, as we all know, and Evan had this great idea to just to, you know, provide some inside transparency around the outage and how customers can be better prepared for things like this. So we're going to get to that in just a minute, but before that, let's just see what's new in the Azure space. And Evan, thank you for putting a whole bunch of links in there. What would you like to start with?
Yeah, we'll talk about the Azure Stack stuff first. I actually sit right next to the support team, so I kind of hear that product as it evolves. But, I mean, big news there, right? Azure Stack is now integrated with Azure Government, which is huge, right? Because now that's actually one of the target markets for Azure Stack, right? There's a whole class of government-type customers that, for whatever reason, can't deploy to Azure Government. So they have some on-premises, you know, resources, and Azure Stack is targeted at keeping your resources and your deployments on premises, but you still tie in with, Azure AD tenants that are sitting in Azure Government, or your subscription that's registered through Azure Government, you know, billing, all those kind of things that are kind of just generic underlying services that help manage things.
Right.
Now Azure Stack can integrate with those. So now you can kind of increase the use of that. So it's a great integration. I'm sure they had to do a lot of work to make that function, but yeah, it's a great step forward.
And so this would allow, let's say, I'm just using, one of the departments in the government, let's say the CIA or something like that, right? Where if they feel like they want to have their own instance of Azure for compute, they can do it using Azure Stack within their own data center, but at the same time rely on some of these external services in Azure for things such as backup and recovery and
right.
Disaster recovery and things like that.
Yeah, or the marketplace is another good one, right? That's kind of a central service that allows you to deploy templates and kind of prefab things. Well, now they can leverage that, but to deploy it into Azure Stack versus, kind of having to figure out how to get that in there yourself. So yeah, no, it's a great combination.
Awesome. Well, so I'm a dev guy, so I'll jump right into the big news. I'm sure a lot of our listeners already caught this, but the VSTS service that we've had for a long time in Azure, Visual Studio Team Services service, has now been renamed to Azure DevOps. It's kind of a one-stop shop for a bunch of things, and they've kind of broken it up into about five or six different services. Azure Pipelines, which is for continuous building, testing, and deployment functions. Azure Boards, which is kind of your unit test and plans and work items and things management, things like that. Azure Artifacts, to store repositories like for Maven, NPM, NuGet package feeds, etc. Azure Repos, obviously the source control system, the core of Azure DevOps, that is. And then Azure Test Plans. So everything's been repositioned under this Azure DevOps service umbrella. And the one part that is not mentioned here, which is not related to Azure, but for folks who do use TFS on-premises, for them, it's been renamed to Azure DevOps Server. So Azure DevOps Server is now what you would install on-site, whereas Azure DevOps Service is what you would use in Azure.
This feels a lot, I don't know about you and Kendall, but like this feels a lot to me like the when we went from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure, mm-hmm. right? Get kind of this recognition of, hey, it's not just Visual Studio anymore. I mean, that's certainly a key part of it. You got Visual Studio Code, a lot of open source folks use it, but it's not just that anymore, right? There's entire use case scenarios where your Visual Studio is not even there, so it didn't really make sense anymore. Yep. So the rebranding was the right way to go.
And they've started, as part of the rebranding, they started reaping some of the benefits of their investment in GitHub. So there is an integration between the Azure Pipelines and the GitHub Marketplace now, or GitHub repository. So there's an app in the GitHub Marketplace that you can install, and it allows Azure Pipelines to pull, all the source code from GitHub, compile it, do whatever it has to be done, and then publish the end repository, the end artifact, an MSI or package or whatever it is, back into GitHub. So that's also a part of this. It's starting to integrate into GitHub a little bit. Right. What else? This I thought you'd like the one on the SQL data warehouse.
So I mean that's again another government cloud advancement, right? It's SQL data warehouse, which allows you to do data warehouse type scenarios versus traditional ones that you do with SQL database. It's now Gen 2 is available in government cloud. And I'll have to confess, I believe Gen 1 was there as well. I don't know off the top of my head, but definitely the latest and greatest is now available in government cloud. And again, that's just all about bringing up feature parity between the public cloud and the sovereign clouds that we have.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Gen 2 is 5 times faster than the Gen 1, which is quite a speed increase. So
Yeah.
lots of reasons to go to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then just the last one, kind of just to wind it down here, is there's a new database migration service that allows you to, we've started coming up with all these PaaS databases now, PostgreSQL, Azure PostgreSQL, which is the managed kind of Postgres from Azure. There is now a database migration service that lets you migrate from a regular, PostgreSQL that you might have on-prem into an Azure Postgres database with, and you can do it even like with zero downtime or minimal downtime during the process. So just something to help you migrate your database into Azure. Okay, that's a good roundup of all the news. I know, but I think Ignite is coming up, right? I think we talked about it last week.
Yeah,
Ignite's
it's either
coming up.
next week or the following, 2 weeks from now, I
I think
think.
2 weeks from now, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll have a lot of news and updates at that time, but this is about it for this week. So why don't we get to the topic that Evan, you wanted to talk about?
I don't know if I wanted to, but it felt like
Okay.
it's the
It was
right
your
thing.
yeah. I agree with you
Yeah.
that in the to be transparent, I think we need to. We're all Microsoft employees, but bad things do happen, and we don't want to just brush it under the carpet. So
Yeah,
let's talk about
exactly.
it.
Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is the South Central US outage that happened last week. It started on September 4th. And basically, and this is all in the public document, by the way, for the audience, right, we're not going to disclose any special secrets or anything in here, right? I like my job. So I don't want to get on that path. But this is more, just acknowledging that bad things do happen. And like you and I were talking about in IM, it actually raises, it's a good time to kind of do a little gut check on your HA architecture and some of the learnings that we've had and decide if you're doing the right thing, right? This was a big deal. An entire data center went down due to a lightning strike and some cascading failures. Again, all kinds of different reasons. The article goes into it. Some was software, some was hardware, right? A whole bunch of different layers that went wrong to a lot of, no pun intended, it was a perfect storm to some extent. But this was probably one of the broader outages because Azure Service Manager, right, our original API for Azure, has a its kind of primary data center is South Central, and a lot of services have moved off of that. A lot of customers have moved off of that, but there's still a lot of things that run on top of that, both internally and externally. And so there were some cascading failures due to that. We also had, that had some impact on Azure Active Directory. Right. And when Azure Active Directory has trouble right now, you've got when your authentication doesn't work, other things fail.
Yeah.
Right. So there definitely became a far-reaching one. The initial impact was mostly mitigated within, roughly 24 hours plus or minus. But there were some definitely some long tails, right? Because we had some storage that was significantly damaged, and we had to make sure that customers didn't lose data. So there's this really long tail, for some element of it.
Right.
But the thing that I found is really interesting is you know, internally we had services fail that on paper everybody said, well, that's designed to be redundant. Well, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And all kinds of different failures happened. We're going to learn a ton from this as far as, like, as you know, assumptions that, you know, people make, or, you know, hey, we found one service. It had this single point of failure on some storage account that was in South Central that nobody really knew was pointing to a specific storage account versus some load balanced or geo redundant one, right? It just got missed. And we didn't know until that storage account wasn't there. And that service tried to fail over
right.
to the other data center that is in. So, you know, but customers go through this as well, right? There's a lot of customers. I've talked to several who said, you know, hey, I just assumed the data center wouldn't go down. So I built everything in the data center and I was redundant, but I was within the data center. And that is a valid assumption to make, but you have to, I think my recommendation is always to be very explicit in the fact that you're making a cost benefit decision when you do that. And just make sure that you and your leadership are okay with that, where you draw that line.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought that there's a lot of lessons that we have to learn internally within Microsoft about mm-hmm. why some of these things didn't fail over. But I think the point you're trying to make is that our customers should also try to learn similar lessons to make themselves more redundant. A lot of us fall into this trap because Azure does rarely fail, right? This is not a common occurrence, as we all know. It's very rare when you have something of this magnitude, and it takes force of nature to cause it.
Which, literally.
hopefully it doesn't happen too often. But, you know, when it goes down to such an extent, are we ready as customers? Are the customers able to handle this? And what are the plans that they have? I agree, like the point about the ASM being just isolated to one region was a good point, right? A good example of how things should not be set up, where everything's just in one region and there's no easy failover or backup available. I know ARM, for example, was built specifically to handle this,
right,
the failover model. But cloud services, as we know, and some of the classic storage services still work on ASM. And there's a lot of people that use it internally at Microsoft, and some of the top customers in the world still use cloud services. So they're here for a little while longer, for at least a few more years. So that whole ASM model has to be fixed in the short term, because we can't afford to have another one of these things.
Yeah, it's interesting. To your point, right? There's some services that leverage ASM services underneath, right? They might be ARM to our customers, but maybe the control plane or, you know, some of the logging plane is ASM. I've had some conversations with some of those services, like, hey, when are we getting off ASM? You know, we tell our customers we should do it. You know, we should make the same step. And it's always, you know, again, this is a conversation everybody that has ever owned an app does, is it's just code. So you can do anything you want to do if you invest the time and effort.
Yep.
But you got to make decisions. There's only so many hours in the day. There's only so much money, only so many people. It was always, well, you know, yeah, we want to focus on this feature before we do that migration.
Right.
Right.
It always takes a backseat.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's just say that I'm sure some of those service teams, that equation, that math has changed significantly due to an outage that impacted ASM. Now they're going to be going, whoa, you know, we need to reprioritize that. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to land in the scheme of things, but I'm sure it's going to land higher than where it was on Monday of last week. Right.
Yeah.
It's always a design decision, right? SQL database is a good example. I don't know if you or Kendall have ever played with the geo replication feature that SQL DB has, mm-hmm. Where you have sort of like Azure Storage in the sense of, there you can set it to do automatic failover, at which point basically Microsoft makes the decision of when, you know, this SQL database infrastructure is not coming back up for some period of time, so we're going to fail over to the secondaries. Or you can control it kind of manually, like you issue some ARM calls or whatever to trigger it. Or you can set up your secondaries as read-only. But if you do a read-only secondary, it's a different endpoint. And so your code has to know how to handle that. Some customers take the approach of, like, I'm just going to code it so that it always tries the first, then if it doesn't get it, it fails over to read only, and everything just trucks along, but I've lost my rights. Others have a manual step to do that failover. And then others are just assuming that they're going to be able to trigger a failover whenever they need to. You know, like they'll make an API call in Azure. Well, if that API call doesn't work, then you can't failover. So now you don't have the other ones built in. So it's these little decisions that you go along that you just, now you have to say, well, not just if my server goes down or my web app goes down, it's what if the data center is not here? Like, how much do I want to invest? Now, Sujeet, I mean, I know you work with a large customer. I think we were talking before that your customer actually made it pretty well through this outage. They had some impact, they had designed their production app, so it worked pretty well, even with this data center down.
Yeah, fortunately, they weren't in that particular region. That was the main. In terms of their core workloads, they're in U.S. East and U.S. West, so they didn't knowingly put anything inside of South Central. However, a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of the ASM and our VSTS features services are hosted in South Central, and that's something that, you know, as a customer, you cannot control, right? You cannot say, I want VSTS in US East. You don't have that flexibility. So a lot of their DevOps features came to a stop, right? Because the VSTS was kind of slow or unavailable during the day. And because ASM was down, they weren't able to provision or deploy new services. So whatever they had up and running is working, but hey, if you try to do something new, there's a chance that it would fail. It was kind of spotty there. So fortunately, the actual production running itself was pretty decent. It was pretty okay. But you know, the impact on developers shouldn't be forgotten here, right? For literally a whole day, developers couldn't do much. The kind of only saving grace is that, you know, I'm sure Kendall is familiar with the whole Git process, where you know you check out code anywhere. You can work on it offline. So there's some work you can do, you know, by using the Git system. You can actually work offline, do your commits, and then when the service came back on, you can then push them into the server and master branch or whatever, and then kick off a build. But that's all you could do in terms of, well, you could only do the development. You couldn't do all the testing or, you know, the even things like work item management, right? Updating that was difficult. So there was a lot of impact to all these secondary functions inside of the company. It may not be the primary function of running the workload. That was fine.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, I mean, that's a whole nother layer of how much redundancy or what do I design around, right? Mm-hmm. If you were, I mean, I like your point about Git, right? Git versus TFS style. TFS style, you have to be connected to check in,
right?
Or to do a commit. If you were using that style, I would expect, I didn't actually try it, but I suspect you couldn't commit anything during that time window. So at least I almost guarantee that nobody made this kind of conscious decision of what if VSTS is down when I try and do my commit, should I pick Git or TFS? Like, I suspect nobody made that exact conversation, but that's, you know, at some level, that's either in the back of their mind, or that's the kind of thing that we need to think about when we think about some of these cloud things and working at scale. Like, how upset am I if my devs can't check in their code? Okay. Well, maybe I'm pretty concerned about that, because I could lose some really, you know, fancy code that so-and-so wrote, but maybe I'm okay if they can't test. Yep. Okay. Or maybe I'm not, right? Maybe I have to be able to test. Like, that cannot fail. Like, shipping that sort of code is my mission critical thing. Like, that, all those are drawing lines that you then have to design your architecture on, and that costs money and or time, and everybody draws that line in a different place.
Yep. Yep. Very, very well put. Exactly. Another thing I found interesting, looking at the preliminary RCA, which we'll put a link to this in the show notes, was something very simple, right? The Azure status page itself. That's the page that everybody goes to see if things are up and running. And obviously, once people started having problems, guess what? Everybody started hitting the Azure status page, I should say. Now, that got an increased amount of traffic, and obviously, it had auto scaling rules in place to increase the number of servers or service instances to absorb the additional traffic. And guess what? There was a problem in the way that the auto scaling was configured, and nobody had figured it out until now. It takes a real incident like this to figure out there's something wrong with the configuration, and so As a result, that status page itself was not working for a while. It was giving you 500 errors because of the autoscaling was taking up time to kick in. So
Right.
just to kind of get, customers also have to take the same mentality, right? Just, okay, I've configured something like autoscaling. You kind of assume that it's going to work, but you actually have to test it out, right? You have to go through this cycle of blasting it or whatever,
Yep.
ensuring that the scale out happens, and then then you know that it's going to work when the problem actually occurs.
Yeah, I it's interesting. I'm again, I've you and I've kind of lived on different sides of the world, right? You've tended to be on the development, new code, helping customers implement something scenario. I'm tend to be on the other side of somebody implemented something in it and it didn't work the way that
It
they
broke.
expected or didn't work the way they wanted. So I kind of always assume that all this stuff will break. But I think that happy middle in there is like if you test it. So a couple of things are going to come out of this, right? We're going to get better, right? We've learned some things. We made some mistakes. We're going to learn from our mistakes. But also, this has fleshed out some things that were sitting there latent. That if something bigger happened, or then we've got the hurricane coming here on the East Coast, which I think you're far enough north. You guys aren't expected to get a
I
whole lot,
think
I think,
we're gonna
right?
be okay,
Yeah, I'm far enough inland that we'll get some wind and some rain, but nothing major. But man, the coast is
the
going to
coast
get
is gonna get
whacked.
hammered,
Yeah,
yeah.
but like we've already taken some of the learnings and everything from South Central a week ago, and we've already like that's the top of our priority list. Say, hey, the storm's coming. Let's go make sure these things are fixed before something happens. Now, again, I think the last time I saw the track, it's not expected to. I mean, they might get some flooding and stuff up that direction, but it's not going to get hit with the high winds and everything where the data centers are. So that's, again, the risk is not the same as if it was sitting in a different physical geography, but we're learning the lessons from it. We're going to go apply them. So that if something does happen, right, we've already learned from it and we've implemented it quickly, right? We will get better coming out of this. Every time one of these happens, we have significant changes in the way we do business and the way we implement apps and policies and procedures get written and designed. And we're way better than we were years ago. But nature, I was up visiting my mom this weekend and she made a comment. She said, man builds and nature decides to show man how little man actually knows. which is true, right?
True.
Mother Nature can come in and anything we thought we could handle, she's willing to throw something bigger and stronger at it.
Hey, Kendall, did you get impacted in any way, either with your work or with customer interactions?
Yeah, so we actually did have some impact with the application that we're the customer that I'm working with, and I agree with you. I definitely think having a mitigation strategy for how can we move forward, what are the things can focus on. I know for us, testing right now is really big because we are in a process where we're moving a lot of new code to production. So having that downtime and not being able, I think we had an issue with Active Directory, so not being able to authenticate. So yeah, we definitely ran into some blockers, and having a conversation early in the morning to say, hey, what are the things we can prioritize? What are the things we can spend our time focused on? And another thing I just want to add is I think that the RCA that came out and the information shared is really impressive that Microsoft provided the level of granularity that they did with what actually happened and the immediate steps were taken in order to kind of learn from this experience, because I think sometimes these type of situations can be somewhat hazy from an end user's perspective. We want to know details as to what happened, why it happened. And so I think having that transparency from Microsoft is an incredible step, because it is a learning opportunity for everyone. I think to me it reminds me of kind of when you're in the airplane and you assume that you're going to have a safe flight. So many of us fly all the time. So you don't listen to, you never, sometimes you don't read the safety card. Sometimes,
Yeah.
you ignore, you have the headphones and pretend like they're turned off, whatever it is. And it really is. Sometimes it does take one of these experiences to say, okay, these things are important. Disaster recovery isn't the lofty concept. It's something we need to be investing in, and it's something that we need to be prioritizing, because you want to prepare for the worst, as horrible as that is, that it can happen. It can happen. And so, I would never say that this is something that's good, but it is something that we can at least create a positive impact moving forward for a lot of our customers, like y'all said, and also Microsoft taking this learning and fine-tuning some of these things. Evan, I think you said it totally right. Some of this latent stuff that's just been sitting there, that who knows when it would have surfaced in the future.
Yeah, now Kendall, I mean, just kind of curious. I mean, without disclosing anything, you can't. But like, Are there, outside of just prioritizing the work that day, it has, did the Azure Stack Central cause, you know, significantly change any of the conversation around some of the features or feature design that you guys are doing, or the component design? Like, did somebody go, hey, we weren't thinking about geo-redundant, fill in the blank, and now those conversations are happening?
I mean, there's potential for that. I probably wouldn't have a seat at the table at my stage in my career in those conversations, but I do know that there was a larger impact on the organization as a whole. So we had, you know, we had on the particular engagement that I'm working on, there were, you know, small issues in the sense of like us actually moving some of the code from development, et cetera. But I know that there was a larger impact because the customer is very heavily invested in Azure. So I know that from a, I guess, let's see, a compliance perspective, there are certain things that happen every night. Because, there were some issues that arose from that. So I think there are a lot of these interpretations happening. It's just kind of above my, I guess, my at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the part that I think I would probably most encourage our customers across the board to do is, you know, I hope you weren't impacted, right? Percentage-wise, a relatively small percentage of our customers were impacted. Well, that's probably not. It's not relatively small this time. It's more, but it's not. It wasn't everybody by any stretch, right? Lots and lots of customers had no impact. But, you know, at a minimum, even if you weren't impacted, I recommend people kind of look through the services that were impacted and think about, hey, did I make an assumption that such and such a service is always going to be around and work in this way? And at least have the conversation. Right. You may still decide, hey, I'm not going to invest in that extra feature work because it's going to take me 3 weeks and cost me 10 grand. And I don't want to spend that. But at least you had that conversation versus just kind of, you know, blindly going on and just assuming that everything was going to be there. It's better to have that conversation and then explicitly make a decision about what you're going to invest in and what you're not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And at a certain point, right, like if you get to the point where you're like, oh, I need this, you know what I mean? It's when you need it, and it's too late to do something about it by the time you need it. So I think this is one of those things, just it has to be such an intentional conversation from the onset, because it's something that if you don't plan for it, you won't, it'll be too little too late.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I like your comment of it has to be an intentional conversation, right? And that's the key here is don't let stuff, if you don't make a decision, if you don't talk about it, then you're just letting, you know, whatever we do on the Microsoft side or whatever the industry does drive, you know, basically make the decision for you that may or may not be the right decision for you as a specific customer.
Yep. So I have a question for y'all based on just some of the articles I was reading about the outage and everything. Can we talk at all and maybe on this a little bit earlier, but like availability zones, do y'all have any thoughts, opinions?
Use them?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things. South Central does not yet have an availability zone architecture, right? It was one of our earlier ones, so we've added that in later. I honestly don't know off the top of my head if we're gonna kind of retrofit that in or not.
I was gonna say one of the main issues this time around was the issue with the storage, right? The storage units got overheated and some of them burnt or got damaged. And the thing is, normally with availability zones, they'd want to switch to the other data center, which is somewhere else, which is not affected. However, in order to maintain data integrity, they couldn't switch right away because some of the data would have been out of sync, and then the customer will lose data. One of the things that Microsoft is dead set against is any loss of data, right? They have this 10 nines data integrity SLA, right?
Yeah.
So they could not afford to have that. So they actually had to forcefully take a downtime to maintain data integrity, wait for the primary data storage units to come up, make sure that they all replicated over before making it available. So there was some kind of tricky things that happened this time around. But in order to preserve data integrity, they took an outage. They basically took a hit on availability. That's what happened.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you raise a good point. Availability zones certainly cover some element of it, but it doesn't do any good if you end up building in a dependency on something that it, like data or a config or a permission, whatever it is, that isn't replicated with that.
Right.
Right. So my web role can come up or my database can come up, but it sees old data, you know, or it sees no data, like that doesn't help you. Right. So it's not one or the other. You kind of have to do both at the same time.
Good question, though.
That's I appreciate y'all touching on that because Sajid, I did see what you were mentioning about Microsoft making that decision to say, okay, we're going to prioritize, you know, the data integrity over making sure that this is available as soon as possible. And that's a big decision to make. I mean, that's an intimidating decision. I wouldn't want to have to
do this. That's actually, go ahead, Sajid.
I was going to say, that'd probably be a Scott Goo decision, but that's just my guess. That's way above my pay grade.
Mine too. I will say, just a commentary on that, I'm trying to think of all the outages that I've been involved in, and I've been involved on both sides, but from the CSS side and the engineering side. I think we have almost, I cannot think of a single one where we've made the decision to fail over and lose data. So I do think that might be one thing for customers to take away from this, is that we tend to prioritize data over availability. And I think I've seen a tendency with customers to assume that, well, availability is just going to be there because somehow the data is going to magically always map or match between sites that are replicated asynchronously. And that's probably not true, right? That asynchronous implies the data is not always going to be the same. So, you know, if we think we can recover it, we're going to spend the time on recovering it, not failing
over. And sometimes it's just the time for them to validate that the data is
absolutely
is not. Yeah. So they have to first validate it. Maybe it's not lost, right? But they have to verify that it's up to date before they open up the floodgates to the backup. So, So this is it's not an easy decision for anyone to make. They went with the right approach, which is let's make sure the data is good.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, like everybody will learn from this. We will get better as both a company and an industry. It'll be better next time. And unfortunately, there will probably be a next time at some point. I wish I could say there wasn't, but it's everybody has it, and it will continue to happen over time.
I will say one thing, though, that this the link that we're going to put to is a preliminary RCA, root cause analysis. It'll take a few weeks. The engineering teams are actively working on it, Evan, as I'm sure you know, to come up with not only the final official RCA, but also the concrete steps that they're going to take to prevent this stuff from happening again. There's going to be very thick document that's going to come out in the next few weeks. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Great. Well, painful experience, but one we will all learn from, right?
Yeah. Great discussion. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, folks.
And Evan for weighing in.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org. Under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.